Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 13, recorded Thursday, September 1st, 2005. Our topics today are spending some rare time off the road, what we'll do for sleep, and what makes for your favorite airline. Well, thanks for joining us today on the Travel Commons Podcast. Hey, this is three podcasts in 3 weeks. You know, I'll tell you, it took me a bit to get back on track after vacation, but I think I got this weekly cadence back on track. So, hey, this week, no bathroom recording for this podcast. I've been home all week. Hurricane Katrina came through me in some meetings in Tampa. They weren't critical, and I didn't feel like following a flight path that took me from Chicago to Tampa by sort of way of Bermuda. So I took rare advantage and decided to stay home this week. Well, I've been closely watching the news coverage around the cleanup efforts around Hurricane Katrina, and it's brought some of that stuff sort of close to home. Some years back, my dad was head of manufacturing for a munitions plant in southern Mississippi at the Semmes Space Center in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, and he lived in an apartment right on the beach, right in the Gulf, probably about 50 yards off the surf line in Pes Christian, Mississippi, between Biloxi and New Orleans, and right at, sort of as near as I can tell, the point of landfall for Katrina. And certainly seeing some of the pictures coming in from that area, just the sheer devastation. I don't think that apartment building, or quite honestly, much of anything else around it, is left standing. And it certainly causes me to think about some of the people that I knew at that plant, my dad's secretary, some of his foremen, and hope that they got out sort of before all hell broke loose. And while you know the pictures coming in this week from New Orleans are dramatic, and anybody who's spent any time in New Orleans, and a number of business travelers have, big convention city, you're in either at the New Orleans Convention Center or at the French Quarter. And, you know, you can see, you look up and you see those river barges passing you by on the Mississippi. I mean, you understand the challenge, sort of the geographic situation, the geological situation that New Orleans is in, sunk below sea level, and you understand what's going on there. I do think that the drama of New Orleans and what's going on there detracts from, you know, the folks over in Mississippi who really took the brunt of the actual force of the hurricane. I mean, it hit land. I mean, landfall was there in Mississippi, and then as that hurricane system moved forward and weakened, it plowed up through the state. So, if there was any state in the union that took the brunt of that storm, it was Mississippi. I saw a graphic in the Chicago Tribune this morning showing that in the lower half of the state of Mississippi, over 50% of the people are without electricity. So, our thoughts go out to them. You know, also, our thoughts go out to a Travel Commons listener who posted some suggestions about eating alone in response to that topic in Travel Commons podcast number 7. And in that post, she mentioned that her son is a chef, had been a chef in New Orleans for 5 years at a restaurant called Herb Saint on St. Charles. And I certainly hope that he was able to get out of the city before the levees collapsed. Some follow-up items from last week. Well, we got some really good comments and some feedback on last week's podcast. Most have actually been around that generations topic, how much our parents influence our career choices and sort of what we consider normal in the business world. Steve Frick of the Frick's World blog left a comment on the website saying, "I never really thought about your point on parents influencing our career choices. My dad also traveled, and I'm a second-generation bag hauler. My favorite story of his was once he was traveling with a coworker. When they arrived at their destination, the client asked, 'So, how was your flight?' My dad's coworker replied, 'You know, it was so rough, I had to put my wedding ring back on.'" And then Nikki Hoffman writes, "I guess it came so naturally to my daughter that we never really considered the idea of passing along travel lifestyles as a function of mom's experience." And then in her notes, she sent links to pictures showing both mother and daughter doing business in Asia, one in Taiwan, one in Hong Kong, separated by 15 years. As always, thanks to everyone who sent notes at comments@travelcommons.com or left comments on the Travel Commons website. That's www.travelcommons.com. Hey, keep them coming. You are absolutely a critical source of content for this podcast, especially as I try and keep on this weekly cadence. I'd also like to thank all the folks who've been linking to the Travel Commons website and recommending the podcast in their blogs, and then also voting and leaving nice comments on podcastalley.com board. I'm going to put up a cross-link block on the Travel Commons website to the folks who are linking back. Just return the favor. But some of the folks who I haven't mentioned before include Michael Bladen, and Mike, if I've botched your last name, I apologize. Mike does the Shoestring Theory music podcast from Calgary, Alberta. Mike's post in his blog about me says he records from hotel bathrooms all over the place. Allegedly, something about the acoustics. I think he has indigestion, though. That's not far from the truth, sort of, especially when I do a big Vindaloo Fest with the guys. Hilary Bauman out of Lexington, Kentucky, quite probably a UK fan, and that's a little bit of a problem since both of my sisters went to Louisville. But she does a blog about just a day in the life of a graphic web designer. And thanks, Hilary, for the link to Travel Commons, and also for some of your graphics comments left on the Travel Commons website. Again, you can find these URLs in the show notes, and then also when I get around to it, maybe this weekend, I'll build a cross-link block. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, catching up at home. The music clip you just heard is an iRiver recording from a Peruvian pan flute duo that recently has just set up camp outside of Chicago's Union Station, which is the train station. On those rare days when I actually go into the office, I actually take a train into Union Station. And suddenly this week, being in town this week, suddenly I noticed we've got a soundtrack as I walk off the train. But as regular listeners have sort of surmised, and sort of the guts of this entire podcast, I do spend a good bit of time on the road. Last week I was in Tampa. Next week, right now, it looks like I'm going to be in Tampa, Raleigh, Durham, and then Washington, D.C., sort of a, if I'm drawing this right, sort of a sort of counterclockwise circle through the Southeast. So, this week has been a rare week without a visit to O'Hare. What do I do with all that time? It's a bit tough because I'm very used to pivoting around my travel schedule, but without one, what do I do? Well, of course, I'll tell you there's some easy choices. I just said, go down to go into the office, sort of collect my mail and, talk to my assistant and, get to know her again. Also hang with my kids sort of the few days before they head off to school. Drink a couple of after-work margaritas with my wife on the back deck. Sort of crank out a really good, long, sort of 25-mile bike ride. But, all of these are a bit internally focused. They're about me and my family. If you've only got a little bit of time, say like a Friday and a weekend, well, then it's easy to stay looking inward. But with a little additional time, this week I decided to try and catch up on some other things that I haven't done in a while. So first, I went shopping. I'll tell you, now that's not something I enjoy, but I've noticed a few of my pants beginning to look a little worn. So I replaced two pair, my olive pair and my black wool pair. And I went out and replaced them with a new olive pair and a new black wool pair. Sort of true to the hunter-gatherer school of shopping, I was in and out in 20 minutes. So now what? Some cultural thing, an art show, a gallery opening? Nah, in Chicago, that's what winners are for. How about a sporting event? Though the Cubs swoon has made it a little easier to get Wrigley tickets, I'll tell you, it's no longer an attractive alternative. So my thoughts turned, as they often do, to food. When I'm traveling, I'm always looking for the local flavor. Say, barbecue in Memphis, a Grubert sandwich in Tampa, green chili, or even better, a green chili cheeseburger in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But you often forget to enjoy some of those same things at home. In Chicago, this means a Chicago hot dog. And for me, it means a visit to the Wiener Circle on the north side at Clark and Wrightwood.
Yeah, let me have a char Polish. We have everything, no pickle, grilled onions.
Here to go.
For here.
5:45.
Yep. Drag it through the garden. Take a look at the picture in the show notes if you're not familiar with Chicago dogs. So I took my char Polish. I sat out on the picnic bench and caught up with the old neighborhood. It's been about a year since I've been down there. There have been some big changes. Streets dug up, a bus depot turned into an assisted living apartment complex, and at least 3 new Starbucks in a 4-block radius. And there's been a few things that haven't changed for 20 years. Well, certainly the Wiener Circle is still there. There's still the same used record store and the futon shop. But I'll tell you, the biggest change 20 years later is having to make a choice. It's now either the cheese fries or the beer at Goose Island Brewery. No longer both.
What have you got on the hand
It's pump? Actually our smoked porter, which isn't on the menu yet. But it's a pretty malty porter, nice subtle finish of a little hint of smoke, basically.
Can I get just a little taste of it before I commit?
Sleep, come on in. I would like for you to spend the night with me. Sleep, where you been? I have surely missed you since you've been gone.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the hunt for sleep. You know, I'll tell you, one nice thing about being in town all week is sleeping in my own bed. You know, like most people, I find that I sleep better in my own bed. I also find that waking up is a bit less stressful. About half the time when I wake up on the road, I have to stop and think after shutting off the alarm. Now, exactly where am I? This exercise usually takes between 15 or 30 seconds, though it can be exponentially longer for each beer after 3 that I drank the night before. Of course, sometimes you look forward to sunrise. Jeff Schultz wrote to tell me a story of his childhood. My one travel story I wanted to share with you, he said, was when my family traveled to South Korea, the military base, via military transport. You sort of end up flying via standby the whole way. We got there fine, but when it was time to return home to the Philippines, there was only one seat available, and that one went to my dad so he could get back to work. My mother, sister, and I were stuck to fend for ourselves. There were no rooms available on the base, and so we had to find a Korean hotel room. The one thing I remember most was my mom telling us not to listen to the things moving in the room while we were trying to go to sleep. Didn't sleep very much that night. I think that's understandable. You know, there's loads of research on the mental and physical impacts of sleep deprivation. People deprived of REM sleep tend to become overly sensitive, have bad memory recall, and are unable to concentrate. Now, one study of business travelers showed that study participants registered a total sleep loss of almost 8 hours by the time they returned home. That's the equivalent of one full night's sleep. And so this has nothing to do with, you know, with time zones or jet lag. It's just as people kept a diary of what happened because of all the travel that they tended to do and the ways that they didn't sleep very well. They came back at the end of that travel trip, 8 hours light on sleep, and actually the author of that study reminded people, remember, sleep deprivation is a common torture technique. But still, most frequent travelers, and I think this study shows it, are willing to endure a little torture, willing to sacrifice sleep for travel efficiency or an extra night at home. I'll tell you, I'm guilty of this, though. I gave up red eyes and 6 a.m. flights for Lent some years ago, and that is the one Lenten resolution I've stuck to. The world divides into really two types of people, and God only knows we can come up with a bunch of different types, but for the purpose of this topic, we're going to divide the world into those who can sleep on planes and those who can't. I was in the former group, those who can sleep on planes, for a long time, but I seem to be slipping over the line into the latter as I get older. I noticed on the flight over to Europe in July for vacation, when the family and I flew over to Geneva, Switzerland, that the Bose headphones, those wonderful noise-canceling headphones, $300 a pop, they seem to help, though. It should be easier to sleep on planes. If you really think about it, there's sort of less oxygen, which means, you know, it'll be easier to snooze. But there is the counteracting issue of seat comfort. Sort of unless you're doing the lay-down bed in first or business class, it's tough to get comfortable in a plane seat. A few years ago, when there were still empty seats on planes, you know, coach travelers on late flights out to the West Coast could luck out and maybe stretch out across an empty row, sort of pop up the armrests and spread out. And indeed, they ended up getting a more comfortable ride than sort of the first class upgrade brigade. But I'll tell you, those days are long gone. It's been a while since even I've had a center seat empty next to me when I haven't upgraded in the first. But, you know, there are different strategies, sort of, you know, leaning back with the eye shades and perhaps the sort of blow-up neck ring, or leaning forward into the big slab of foam, or leaning up against the window, or a couple leaning against each other. There's a multitude of strategies, and I think it's really sort of what works for you. And sort of certainly if you're trying to do the couples thing, it helps if the person you're leaning against is someone that you're fairly intimate with. Not a good way to get to know your seat partner on the first time. If you haven't met them before, leaning against them, bad thing. I will tell you, though, that the best strategy I ever saw, though I couldn't bring myself to duplicate it, was a former colleague of mine. And when he was a regular on the Northwest Red Eye between San Francisco and Detroit, he bungee corded his head to the airplane seat back to prevent his head from doing that sort of forward head bob. Actually, he had gone to the point after the first couple of times and he was noticing a crease across his forehead, he actually started carrying a bandana that he would then put on his forehead and then stretch the bungee cords across his head. He was famous, or is it really notorious, throughout the Northwest flight attendant group within 2 weeks. So the last topic on Travel Commons Podcast, how do you decide on your favorite airline? Before we launch the new Travel Commons poll, I need to update the results of the last Travel Commons poll, the worst U.S. airport. And you know, we've been tracking this for a couple of months now on the left-hand column of the Travel Commons website. I declared the finish order last week, but then I didn't quite get around to loading the new poll, which allowed some new votes in and ended up changing the results. So, you know, avoiding any recount jokes relating to either Florida or Ohio, let alone any comments about voting in the city of Chicago, here are the new and the final results. LAX and Denver tied for first as the worst U.S. airport, nosing out O'Hare by one vote. DFW edged out Newark by one vote to capture a very distant third. That's it. Honest, I've closed it down. We've now moved on. And those are the results of the worst U.S. airport poll. So the new poll, which is now up, I'm going to ask you to vote for not the worst airline, but your favorite airline. You know, sometimes, oftentimes, it's too easy to bitch and moan about travel, and God only knows there's enough material, and I'll tell you, it's a rich vein, and I mine it for this podcast. And, you know, sometimes, and I've commented on it in other podcasts, you know, sometimes I think it's almost too easy, and we don't look at the good side of travel. So, and in this case, especially around airlines, given the cutbacks, given the near bankruptcies, I think it's absolutely harder to name the things that would make you like an airline than to name the things that would make you hate it. You know, is it service frequency that drives loyalty, price, amenities, the people? You know, is it the sum of all these experiences? How many bad experiences does it take to outweigh the good? Or how many good experiences does it take to wash out the taste of one bad experience? And again, your favorite airline may not be, you know, depending on where you live, if you're in a hub, your favorite airline may not be your most frequent airline. But that's what we're asking. What is your favorite airline? And okay, just to make it one last little bit harder, I've limited it to U.S. domestic airlines. You know, a few years ago when I was flying between Chicago and London every 2 weeks, Virgin Atlantic was my favorite airline when I was in upper class. And, you know, it's easy to load up on the amenities and be everybody's friend when you're on regulated international routes. It's much more difficult to ring the bell when you're doing the 60-minute milk runs between, say, LA and Phoenix or Chicago and Columbus. So that's the challenge. Take a look. It's on the left-hand column of the website, of the TravelCommons.com website. Take a look, think about it, and give it a vote. If I'm missing your favorite airline, then drop me a line or leave a comment under the poll, and I'll try and add it. And also, as you're thinking about it, after you vote, leave a comment on the poll site around what drove you to make this decision. I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to some of the answers. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 13. I'm going to put this all together and get it up on the server before Getaway Friday, before Labor Day weekend. Not that I'm going anywhere, though. I tell you, the last thing I want to do is try and travel on a three-day weekend. I think I'm just going to stay home, bid farewell to the summer, some margaritas on the back deck, and maybe some pork barbecue. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and especially the new subscribers, the folks who have just joined us. I hope you decide to stay subscribed, and for those of you who have been with me through the beginning, thank you very much. I hope you enjoy it. As always, I appreciate any comments directly to comments@travelcommons.com or on the travelcommons.com website or at the comment board at podcastalley.com. Again, thanks very much. Enjoy the Labor Day weekend. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye now.